Blog Talk Radio.
To inform, inspire, and empower Alcoholics Anonymous sponsorship, locally and internationally, to be their very best, both personally and spiritually. This is the mission of RumRadio.org, an internet radio program dedicated to carrying the message of recovery to a world plagued by alcoholism and addiction. Alcoholism and addiction is the number one health issue in our world today, and RumRadio.org is actively participating in the solution. Interviews with a plethora of people sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Live Sundays at 9 p.m. Central Time and rewound again on Saturday and Monday. Tune in to 12-Stepology at its best on RumRadio.org.
And the crowd went narcoleptic. Thanks, Claire. That's my granddaughter, Claire. She's 9 years old. One person in the audience, she comes out of bed with her teddy bear, and there she is. All that noise. Can you imagine that enthusiasm? Love enthusiasm. You know, that's the definition of a sale, is the transference of enthusiasm. Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and RumRadio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and in the unknown universe, which is shrinking as we speak, or might be expanding, but it's unknown. I'd like to acknowledge WNAH, that's Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and in Sweet Home, Alabama. And they do this as a public service presentation. We also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. And we have a post going in that magazine for April. They usually come in like the 10th of April or the middle of April, the middle of the month is their cutoff time or whatever. But it's the 12 steps to a happy, joyous, and free life. It's a really good post. It's gone on the Facebook. It's had quite a bit of acceptance in the recovery community. So I think you're going to enjoy that, and they're going to be posting that for us. I'd greatly like to introduce my co-host, Harold B. He's a family intervention specialist. He does a fine work with troubled families. And I personally believe that the families are the basic unit of our society. And as the family goes, so does the country, so does the nation, basically so does the world. We have discovered that most of the problems we have with drugs and alcohol is the breakdown of the family unit. Children are growing up latchkey kids. That was a common phrase. We don't hear it as much anymore because it's such a commonality. Used to be moms used to be home raising the kids, and dad went out to work. Well, one paycheck don't float the boat anymore, barely two. So both of them are gone. Who's raising the children? Basically, they're raising themselves. Unless children are taught correct principles, they can teach themselves. But without those principles, they grow up on the mean streets like empty lot weeds. They just grow. Gangs, clubs, drugs, sex, and rock and roll. So now we have an epidemic of drug addiction and alcoholism. According to Google, you know, Google, 1,000 years from now, 1,000 years hence, the anthropologists will conclude that as a society, they all communed with an all-knowing God named Google. And according to Google, there's 140 million drunks in the world. So that's not taking into account the drug addicts, which is who knows. So I hadn't done that. But the problem is huge. Harold also goes to the prisons and the jails, carrying the message. That's what we do. We carry the message. And there we find that most of the folks in there are there because of crimes of opportunity fueled by drugs and alcohol. You're going to hear in the program, experience strength and hope. Experience is an inventory of our past mistakes. That's how we relate to each other. Strength is the ability to lift to carry. We lift our fellows and we carry the message of recovery. That's what keeps us sober. And hope is the belief that our lives will continue to improve as we do the next right thing. And that next right thing is not to take that first drink of alcohol, that first hit of crack, or the first whatever. To trust in God, clean house, and help the next sufferer. And if we do that, we can attain and maintain long-term sobriety. If we don't, all bets are off. So, Harold, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Joseph. It's true. The decline of the family unit is really a problem here in this country. The most common type of child abuse is the abuse of neglect. The average dad spends in one-on-one contact with his kids on average 5 minutes a week with each kid. That's about 45 seconds a day, one-on-one connection with his kids. So that's not nearly enough. Kids learn by example. And so I think we're in serious trouble here in this country, and, well, I don't really know about other countries. It's an honor and a privilege to be here on the program. It's my way of giving back. I know it's your way of giving back also. I want to tell our listeners that this is not a money-making proposition. Joseph produces the radio show and his website, rumradio.org, as a public service. It's our way of giving back. So I'm glad to be here, and let me turn it back over to you, Joseph.
Thank you, Harold. I'd like to give you our phone number. Do you want to do that, Harold, or do you want me to?
Oh, go ahead. Do you have it? It's 949-534-0621. Again, 949-534-0621. You can call in, and if you press the number 1, you can actually join the program, ask a question live.
Thank you, Harold. There we go. My computer screen blanked out for a second just as I went to get the number. I should not know it by heart by now. 949-534-0621. And in New Jersey, it's 949-534-0621. In the Himalayas, it's 949. Okay, you get the drift. Please call in if you have a question or you got a comment. We accept that. We also have you're going to be doing the chat room?
Yes.
Okay, tell them how to get there.
Go to our website, rumradio.org. In the upper right corner, you'll see the word live. Click on that. That goes to Blog Talk Radio. And there on Blog Talk on the right-hand side, you can find our chat room. So you could type a question if you'd like.
I'd like to also let you know that this is not AA. This is not Alcoholics Anonymous. This is not NA, Narcotics Anonymous. It's not CA, Cocaine Anonymous. This is Rum Radio and rumradio.org. We're not affiliated with any of the 12-step programs. We're more like Paranoids Anonymous. The only problem is nobody will tell you where they hold the meeting. Like to get started tonight with I use the big book, and the reason why I like to use the big book because all 12-step programs come from the original understanding of the basic text of AA, which is called the big book or the blue book. And in that book, they're starting to understand that people have taken that out. My church does it, and other churches, and NA, and, you know, they have their own book and all that. But the basic understanding of the 12 steps come from this basic text, and this is the template for all the others. So I like to use the big book. There's other some really good information. The big book is very humble in the sense that it says this book is only meant to be suggestive. We know so little. Disclosed if your own house is in order, and they're talking about your spiritual house. So these are two statements of humility saying, hey, look, we don't know it all. There's other things that are going to come abroad that is going to help the next sufferer. You know what? We're okay with that. So our goal is to help you to get sober and stay sober. But we can only do so much. I like to think of us like starfish throwers. A red tide comes in, and a million starfish litter the beach. And a fellow goes down there, and he's tossing them back into the water and into life. Another guy comes along and says, what are you doing? So I'm tossing them back in, and the ones that go back in live. He says, but there's a million of them. You're never going to get them all. He says, I know that, but I can get the ones I can get, and that's what we do at Rum Radio. We try to help those that we can help. The rest of the folks, they're going to have to help each other. But this is a good start. This is a really good, I had a sponsor that said, by doing this, we become the point of the sword. You like that? I like that when he said that, the point of the sword. We have good information about sponsorship. We believe that one-on-one sponsorship is the key to all 12-step programs. One person working with another person with a similar understanding of illness, a empathy of illness. So that empathy carries over into good instruction, which carries over into recovery, which carries over him, the next guy helping the next sufferer. So, hey, it works. Helped millions. And in the big book on chapter 5, there's a chapter called How It Works. And I'm going to read that to you, so give me a minute. Rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. There are those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They're not at fault. They seem to have been blonde that way. It's born. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you had decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go. Absolutely. Remember, we deal with alcohol. Cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Most of us exclaim, what an order, I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow. What's your point? Well, that we were willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would. He was sought. You notice, Harold, that A, B, and C is steps 1, 2, and 3?
Right.
There it is, 1, 2, and 3. You could do steps 1, 2, and 3 sitting at a traffic light. Unless you're sitting at a traffic light in New York City. You know why?
Why?
Because the New York minute is made up of the annoyed nanosecond. You have less time. New York minute is faster than other minutes. But otherwise, you can do a third step. And on step 10, it says promptly admitted. What I found is it's easier to swallow crow while it's still warm. Once cold, it has the bitter aftertaste of egret.
Oh, no. That's awful.
No good? You didn't like? Oh, I thought that was cool.
You will. I like
well,
it.
Well, because I made it. Because I made it up. I think all my stuff is cool. You know, what are you going to do? I might not be much, but I'm all I think about. You know, they discovered that there's a different universe, completely separate universe, not a galaxy, but a separate universe. And I was so excited when I heard that. The first thing I did was I went out and I applied for the position of center. Anyway, so now our guest tonight is Shannon. Shannon is from Florida.
Hello.
And Shannon has... Yeah. How are you doing tonight, Shannon?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
Good. Thank you. And thank you so much for coming on the show. It's one of these things that this is how we give back in the program, being of service. So what we would like to hear from you is what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, and what keeps you into maximum service to God and your fellow beings. So what was it like, Shannon?
Well, the horror stories is probably a lot like most people. I pretty much thought
I want to hear your horror story.
Okay. My father passed away when I was about 6. I was just with my mother and my sister. We lived in Ohio. We picked up and moved to Florida. And my mom had a sister and an aunt here. I thought I had a pretty good childhood. I really did. I never complained about, you know, much. I never really wanted for anything. I didn't even know we were poor until I was in high school and realized we didn't have all the money I thought we did. My mother made a very good job of, you know, taking care of whatever we needed. Never in my life did I think I was sheltered, but the further back I look, the further I can see into the future, it seems. So I did what normal people do, you know, living in a small town. I grew up, I graduated high school, went on to college, got married, had children, And
well, let's back up a little bit. Now, okay, so you're 6 years old, and now who died? Your mom died? Your dad died? Who died?
My father.
Your father mm-hmm. died. Okay.
1977.
When was the first time? Smoking or the who knows?
Yeah, but he was only 35. It was back then they sprayed asbestos with, you know, no mask, so it's hard to tell.
Oh, asbestos, yeah, that's a killer. So when was the first time you really drank alcohol and the lights went on?
You know, it's funny. I drank in high school a little bit, but I was always usually the designated driver. But I remember every time I did drink, I got drunk. And never really put a correlation to that. I didn't like the taste of it. I didn't like being out of control. Just wasn't for me. I tried marijuana probably I was 18 years old. I seemed to enjoy that. It was, you know, it didn't really turn in for me personally at that time to a gateway drug. It was just a recreational thing. Still didn't drink very much. Got married. Still, you know, ongoing, smoking marijuana, doing, that's about all I did.
How about your husband smoked too? Your husband smoked marijuana,
yeah.
So you both smoked dope. Drinking really wasn't a big deal, you just drank. You didn't drink alcoholically.
Not at all. When I did drink though, you know, it wasn't one or two. I never could stop. If I was gonna drink, I was gonna get so drunk that I, you know, was gonna pass out and wouldn't remember the next day. It wasn't a recreational thing for me. You know, I couldn't say no. So, you know,
so they call that binge drinking, right? You were a binge
mm-hmm.
drinker?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And
you didn't know what that was at the
often.
Time.
No, didn't happen often. I struggled with depression. I struggled with some eating disorders in high school. I chose evidently to turn it that way. Didn't know at the time, but, you know, then I do. So I turned on myself that way. However, fast forward, you know, I get married. When I married my husband, he was the biggest drug dealer in our small town. And, you know, it just seemed like it was kismet. You know, I had been dating police officers, and it just wasn't cool to date cops and smoke pot. So this was, you know, perfect as far as I was concerned. And we were in love. We did, you know, fall in love and got married. And within a couple of years, we had, you know, two beautiful daughters. And all of a sudden, his drinking that I thought was cool at first turned into, you know, more than, you know, he was drinking all the time. So, and then he started to be abusive. And so that was my out. You know, I remember sitting on the couch and telling him, I'm going to show you what it's like to live with an alcoholic. Never even realizing at the time the prophecy I had just set forth in my own life. So I showed him. I wasn't a beer drinker. If I was going to drink, I realized very early on that, it worked if I drank shots. And the harder, the better, the quicker, you know, the whole goal was to pass out. It was a coping mechanism for me. I hid in the bottle. And previous to that, before I started drinking, actually, they had sent me to, I was depressed. You know, I had two kids. I was 25 years old, two kids under the age of two, still in diapers. My life was all of a sudden this wonderful man I married. It just wasn't this perfect fairy tale I thought it was going to be. And so they sent me to a psychiatrist who quickly informed me that I was bipolar.
Let me ask this. Now, his drinking, was that gradual or was he a drinker? You said he was smoking dope and just drinking, but when you drank, you were binge. How about him? Was this a gradual progression to alcoholic drinking, or was he always a heavy drinker?
He always had a beer. And pretty much that's all he drank was beer. But he would drink. He always had a beer in his hand. And after work, as soon as work, you know, he worked, he had a job, and he was responsible. But as soon as it was, you know, the clock hit five, the shirt came open, and the beer got, you know, that's just how it was. And again, when you're dating and things, that stuff, you know, you don't think about it being a problem. So, you know, now we're married and we have a family and my life's not the best. So they send me to this place, at the health department. Actually, we didn't have, you know, lots of money for doctors and whatnot. And they said I was bipolar. Now, back then, and up until recently, I believed what doctors told me. I mean, if they were going to tell me I was sick, well, why would they lie to me? You know what I mean? I evidently, yes, and they could make me believe. And so sure enough, I was believing that I was a rapid cycler bipolar, and I could be up and down at the same time. And, you know, then they started putting me on these medications, and one led to another. And yeah, unconsciously, I didn't even realize this till way after I had been sober, but those prescription drugs they were giving me for, you know, the antipsychotics and that stuff, that was my first addiction. You know, they'd ask me, how are you feeling? And if I said good, well, that was okay. But if I said, oh, not so good, well, they'd add something else. You know, and it just got to the point where I was numb. I was literally comatose. I didn't smile, frown. There was no emotion. Panic attacks constantly. And then it went into the, you know, I was crazy. So I started drinking to make myself not crazy. And that just made me more crazy. So it all progressed from there. You know, the drugs got more intense and more of them, harder kinds. You go through a young person in a small town with a marriage like that, and at that point you're thinking, you know, I'll do whatever, you know, and I'll do whatever it takes to save it. Not knowing that that behavior was feeding something. I was getting something out of that abusive behavior as well. But at the time I didn't see that. So I basically just hid. I hid in the bottle. And finally somebody got in my face one day, and I was a blackout drunk. I mean, I would drink, and I could drink an entire bottle of Goldschlager in a day. You know, it didn't matter, and it was hard. Whatever it was that was going to do it, and do it hard. So eventually we started, you know, it went to the mass and, the, you know, little bits here and there. And I'm very grateful. Something in me at that point told me, you like this too much. You know, this is something you probably can't handle. And I don't know where it came from. That had to be my higher power in me somewhere saying, this is just not for you. I did it. I experienced it. And I know that I can, and I did it enough to empathize with people now that have done it. But it just progressed. My drinking progressed. My behavior, you know, my powerlessness progressed, and my unmanageability of my life just deteriorated very quickly. I found myself all of a sudden divorced. Somebody had said something. My mother had actually approached me and got right in my face and told me that I was nothing but a GD drunk. And that crushed me. So that was my first, you know, well, I better go do something to make her happy. And that's what my life was all about, making other people happy. I don't think I really had an original thought. Most of my life, it was always regurgitated from what I heard or what I was told to believe or, you know, controlled in some way. Again, I was getting something out of that behavior as well. It wasn't all one-sided. I didn't have to make a decision. I didn't have to be accountable on any level. I went to AA, and basically just to shut people up. And, you know, if I'm doing, you know, I'd go in there, and I'm very intelligent, so I could listen to what they said. I could stay clean long enough to go to the meeting, and then very quickly I could learn how to regurgitate what they wanted to hear to make me look good so that I could then, when I left the meeting, go still do what I want. You know what I mean? The insanity.
I could do it. I could do that. Yeah, I could do that. I had to wrap down. In 90 days, I could teach you AA.
I hadn't really read
the big book, but I went to enough meetings, but I had all the quips, and I'm funny, and, you know, and I knew the program. That was it, man. I got this one nailed, sure. The chameleon.
Right. That's me, absolutely. I was a chameleon, 100%, whether it was my feelings or my beliefs. You know, I'm 43 years old, and it's only been recently I realized that I like chicken wings. You know, all growing up, my mother didn't like chicken wings. And we didn't eat chicken wings. And so it was just something that, you know, and when somebody would say something to her, I would hear her say, we lived on a farm. We didn't need to suck the meat off of bones. I don't need to eat chicken wings. We had plenty of food there on the farm. And all of a sudden, not too long ago, somebody said something to me, and don't you know, I came back with that very answer. And I went, oh, wow. And you know what? I tried chicken wings. I love them. They're fantastic, you know what I mean? But that's how deep it was. I really wasn't even aware of things that I really liked. When people say I needed to find myself, I didn't even know where to go to begin. You know, it was almost like creating a whole new person. So anyway, I went to the meetings for about 5 months on and off, didn't doing what I wanted to do. And much to everyone's surprise, this sober Shannon came up with a DUI. And how did that happen? She wasn't drinking. Well, you know, obviously they hadn't been privy to all of my antics when I wasn't around them. So I got a DUI. That humbled me a little bit, still not enough, a little more serious. But I was never one of those people that got it the first time. I need to be in pain. I need to be so overcome with pain that I can't do it anymore. And it has to become law for me. And I, every time I went back out, I learned something new, you know, to the point where I finally got sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Did you know that, Bill W., you said that pain was the touchstone of all spiritual growth? And I'll tell you this. You can't grow spiritually and be comfortable at the same time.
No. No, no. That's what people, you know, used to say. I'd say, but I don't like this. And they'd say, my one of my sponsors, she'd say, what is it, uncomfortable? And I'd say, yeah. She goes, good for you. It's just uncomfortable. And that used to drive me insane. But she was right. You know, if I'm comfortable and I'm satisfied with what's going on, I have no reason to grow.
You're not growing. Mm-mm.
You know, and
no.
For me, you know, everybody talks about the gifts that we're given and all these blessings. I'll tell you what, some of the biggest blessings I've received are some of the worst things that have happened to me in my life. You know, the pain that I had to endure made me a stronger person. It made me grow spiritually and understand things that I wouldn't. The experience of that living is something that you can't find in books. You know, you can't find in a program. You can only find it from that other person. You know, somebody who's been there. And that's where, you know, you said something earlier about, you know, the touchstone is other people.
Hey.
Sharing it with other people and working it with another person. I could be very honest with everyone else. I just couldn't be honest with me, you know. And once I learned how to be honest a little bit with other people, then it would pull it out of me.
Okay, so you're in the program now, and you're melding in, you're fitting into the part of the landscape and on the walls, the wallpaper. You're turning into wallpaper, so you belong there. Now, did you go for a sponsor? Did you know what a sponsor was, or did a sponsor find you, or were you going to get through the program, through the process? I call it osmosis, sitting in a lot of meetings, waiting for the message to come through the floor, up the chair, legs, up your butt and into your head, and an easier, softer way has been found. So which way, what were you doing at the time?
Well, it was a little bit of everything. I think when I first went in, I did figure that. I just thought, okay, I'm just going to sit here, kind of fly under the radar. I had a sponsor by name only, didn't call them, you know, didn't want to bother anybody with my problems.
Right.
So
did they find you? You find them? How did that work? How did you get that sponsor, even by name?
Just people. When I went to the first meeting, I looked it up online. I went to the first meeting, and as soon as I walked in, some man got up, got me a book, and got me a piece of paper. They sent it around, and, you know, in this where I'm at in a small area, you don't have many women. There's probably 3 women to 35 men. So there's not much good female sobriety around here. And, you know,
if you want a sponsor, you're going to have to have a guy. All right. So that's okay.
Right.
Usually
an old lady, you know, an old lady who's, you know, at my age at that point, looking at her like she's crusty, you know, what do I have in common with you? You know, you can't relate to me. I've got young children. You don't even have, you know what I mean? It's like, so I didn't want to be there, so I used every excuse not to. And they would come and ask me if I wanted to talk, and I would give them a good show, you know, like I did the rest. And I had 1 foot in the program to show them how I could do it, but then I still did it my way. And
so this was your sponsor.
Living proof that that doesn't work.
So this way, you acknowledge this guy as your sponsor. You have a sponsor? Yeah, I did. I don't really remember his name, but he's my sponsor. John. John's my sponsor. Yeah, okay. Right? Like that?
Right, right. Right. And I have this,
okay.
There was one guy named Frank, and he was an okay guy. You know, he was one of the only guys that didn't, honestly, when I, you know how everybody likes to hug. And on the first meeting, he was the only guy that hugged me that I didn't feel like I'd been violated. You know?
Okay.
It was like not with that whole body hug thing. And so he just kind of was like a brother figure. So I turned to him.
Right.
So finally I decided, okay, I might want to get, after the DUI, okay, I might want to get serious about this. So I got a woman sponsor. She was an older lady, very nice. Worked with her the steps for the first little while. As soon as I did my fourth and fifth step, she helped me with my fourth, did my fifth. The very next night, I walked into the rooms, and everybody was whispering. And I thought, well, you're just...
Oh, no.
Just get in. Well, it's a very small town. She knew somebody I knew that knew somebody I knew, and bam, my whole story's in this room.
Oh,
and it
no.
crushed me. It really crushed me. And I backed way off, and went right back to what I was doing. And I had people from the program come and speak me out and say, we're not all like that. I didn't know. I was just completely, I had one uncle that had been in AA, and I had no idea the workings of it, the politics.
I'm so sorry to hear that. I hear that once in a while. That's not usual. It's not normal, but things like that happen. On the Rum Radio website, we address that. And part of the way we address that is we give you a questionnaire, an interview for a sponsor. So this way you have a little bit more, but you're kind of limited. You were in a small town, but you still found a woman, which is interesting. Usually I recommend on the website too, men with men and women with women, because it's easier to relate to the gender. But the key is if the circumstances that that's not possible and you have an opposite sex gender sponsor, it's okay if you're working the steps and it's working, well, that's fine. If it's not working, you could always change. But it's just interesting, you having a limited amount of choices for the same gender, you still were able to find one. Now, it's sorry that she turned out to be a gossiper. I heard a preacher say one time, gossip was the devil's radio. It's the only thing that travels faster than bad news is good gossip. All right, so you're burnt. Okay, you burnt on your fifth step, and you're going, this ain't working, man. So where are you going?
Right,
where are you going
right.
from here?
So they asked me to come back in, they coaxed me, and finally I did end up coming back, and I did get a sponsor. I was very hesitant about doing step work with her until I got to know her. I did get to know her. I did some my steps with her, and she's still to this day one of my very best friends. And she was an older lady, but she had a lot of sparkle. You know what I mean? She was like one of those ladies from the USO that, the performers, and hadn't changed a bit. She was 80-something years old. So she still had that fire, and I liked that, So as time would go on, I got into therapy. As well as AA, cognitive therapy and speaking with doctors and whatever. Found one I really liked, and he had a background in sobriety, so I did the steps again with him, another step. And at that time, I thought I only had to do them once. I didn't realize that this was a, way of life, because, again, I sat there and listened to what I wanted to hear, and pulled out the program and what the meetings, what I wanted, not what I needed. At the time, I didn't really know. I didn't know what I needed. So as time went on, everything happens for a reason. That sponsor and I, she became like a grandmother figure to me and a friend. And as time went on, we actually had to switch roles, And that's where I find that recovery is never easy. It's never simple, and it's never what you think it's going to be. I always thought of sponsors as somebody who was above me, because when I came in, that's where they were. I had no business. I didn't know how to tie my shoes being sober, let alone how to live. And so I guess for a short time, they might have been my higher power. Even though I had a God, they were the ones who were telling me practically what you need to do step by step to live sober.
That's common. There's a power differential between a sponsor and a sponsee. We're on equal planes, but just because a sponsor is taking on a responsibility and you look up to them, and of course, you look there with the answer man or the answer girl. She's got the answers, so hopefully they're the right answers. The question is that did you do your homework and find somebody who really is a good match and a good fit? See, that's lot of folks, my experience in the program is they tell you, you come in and you have no idea the jargon, the culture, what a sponsor is, or any of that, or first time you ever see the 12 steps is up on the wall. They look like the two plaques of the Ten Commandments. You have no idea what that's about. And, of course, they tell you, get a sponsor, start working the steps. You have no idea. I wrote to that recently, and there's three places in the big book where the clear-cut direction is for the sponsor to go get you. Three times
right.
It says, go find the prospect and start working on them. If the person you seek out is not interested, go find someone else who's desperate enough to take what you want, and then the man making the approach is the person that you want. So three times it says, go get a sponsee, and for some reason or somehow, the program has accepted the fact that people walking in who have no idea, no knowledge, are supposed to go find the sponsor. Does that sound ludicrous
right.
to you? I don't get it. I just don't get it. And
yeah.
when you tell people that, they get angry. I says, it's in the big book. Here it is. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. Where it is. But anyway,
well,
okay,
I feel
so
that,
you're moving on.
We don't explain. But even on that, on that subject, I feel sometimes that, you know, when newcomers come in, we just expect them to know. You know, we don't explain what is a sponsor. We just say, don't drink, get a sponsor, go to meetings. And
yeah.
that seems simple.
Well, basically,
but we never really explain. And for me, I need to understand before I can, you know, I have to have some knowledge so that I can understand
sure.
before I can change. And so I find, you know, you get some of the people in there, and I'll sit in meetings and listen to them now. And, you know, a newcomer will come in, and they'll talk out of turn or they'll say something, and it's like, look, nobody told them there's a meeting before the meeting that you're supposed to give them a sheet that tells them what they're supposed to do and not do, you know? And then I find it amusing watching the sobriety of the people who have 23 years getting irritated at these people for something they would have done. You know what I mean? So
the dynamic
of an AA meeting is very busy if you allow it to be, you know? And that's, see, before I was really there for me, and I paid attention to the meetings for me, I paid more attention to that kind of stuff, you know, to the dynamics of the meeting, the feelings
right.
in the meeting. I watched people when other people were talking, and I wasn't really there for me. I was there.
Okay, so now you have a sponsor, right, and you're working the steps. You were able to get through the steps in a fairly diligent. How did you do it? Did you do it timely? Did you drag them out, or how long did it take you to get through the steps?
I would say all in all total, the second time, very good, about 4 or 5 months. You know, and of course I'd had a background on them before. And like you said, I walked in the first night and looked at 1, 2, and 3 and went, oh, I can do that. And then realized that they weren't just that simple, that they did take more. My hardest step was 4. It wasn't even 5. It wasn't hard for me to tell someone else. It was hard for me to decide what to write down, you know, what was me and what was them, you know. That's where I really aided in the help of a sponsor, somebody to explain to me step by step. Because you can read the big book or you can read those other things, but, you know, I am one of those people who needed the 12 steps as coping skills. It is set out step by step instructions for what I need to do. And I needed that for that kind of stuff too, you know. How do I do the 4-step? What kind of stuff do I write down? Well, does this qualify? Does that not qualify? Again, I'm a recovering perfectionist and people pleaser, so I wanted to do it perfect and correctly.
Right.
But once I stopped giving it all that power, and it was explained to me that way, I was just giving it too much power, and I was complicating things, that's where your sponsor comes in handy. For me it was, you know, to explain the ins and outs. Also a network of people. A sponsor is important for me. But in a small community like this, you find that, you know, one person might have 6 people as her that she's sponsoring, and they have a life as well. So you learn to have a network. There's probably 5 or 6 women I know that I could call, you know, or men, that I could call any time of the day or night, and they'd be there for me 100%. You know, not just my sponsor. But, again, I live, you know, in an area where you need that. Plus, I think it's good
sure.
to have different perspectives. You know, if I just have one perspective coming at me all the time, I'm going to tend to believe that perspective until I could learn to think for myself.
Oh,
you know,
very good.
Said,
yeah, I agree that.
That a sponsor has good information, that's good. But if they don't, then you're screwed again, you know.
Yeah, once you go through the steps with a sponsor, it's good to have someone to you know, go over things with. But at that point, once you've worked the steps and then you're working with someone else, the best thing a sponsor could do, you commiserate about if you're having a problem with a sponsee, one, or anyone else with any type of sobriety can do the same thing as a sponsor can do. So if you can't reach your sponsor, it doesn't make sense that you don't do it. You call someone else. That's what the lifeline is for.
Right, exactly. And if I don't do anything else, it's that's just because that's what I wanted to do. You know,
right.
And I used to be, well, it was an excuse. Well, she was busy. Well, no. You know, I've come to the place in my recovery where I can be accountable. I have to be accountable to grow, you know. And that was the biggest thing when I was finished with the 12 steps. And I thought, okay, I'm done, you know, like everybody else. Okay, I'm good. and then I just kind of stayed stagnant. And I couldn't figure out why. What's going on here? Why am I not, you know, growing and happy, joyous, and free? And well, because I thought I had graduated. I thought AA was my destination. And this is where I was supposed to be. But then once I got, you know, I started thinking, okay, well, you know, all this stuff that they've been telling you that you've only been half-ass working, you need to really do it. So even though I wasn't drinking and stuff at the time and drugging, I wasn't really working it to its full potential. And my mother used to say this thing all the time, it's like, you get out of life what you put into it. And one day all of a sudden it hit me and I applied it to that principle and I went, wow, you're right. And, you know, now I do those 12 steps. Sometimes I'll do them in one day. You know, I had to practice them so that I could live.
Let me ask you this. I hear that.
Sober, but live sober. Mm-hmm.
You have something, Harold?
Well, I was just saying, yeah, one day. That's how they did it originally.
You know, it confuses me, though. I hear that a lot in the program that people, N.A. too, I got into it with the N.A., and he's done his all 12 steps 4 or 5 times or 10 times or something, and I hear that in A.A. that I'm doing all my steps again. Now, once we put away the past on step 4 and 5, right, that's about the past, and then my understanding, past insults. Step 10 is step 4 through 9 in a single package taken in the present. So if you're doing a regular step 10, I don't see the point in going back and doing all 12 again, because why would you want to regurgitate the past again, or things accumulating because you haven't been doing a step 10? So I don't, that kind of, we got to do step 1. That's the sobriety. That's the only perfect step. We can't drink or drug. Otherwise, all bets are off. So, okay, 1's got to be done perfect. All the other, the 11 steps, the other 11 or the design for living is the solution. So we do step 3 on a regular basis because we give it up, our will, to God, and then we take back our will and we give it up and we take it back in this endless cycle, you know, and hopefully as we grow we don't take it back as often, but hey, look, you're going to take it back sometimes, don't kid yourself, right? And you're going to do 6, who's entirely ready? In essence, you can only be ready as you can be at any given time. So 6 is always in play. 7 is on God's time to remove those defects of character when they come up. So 7's in play. And 10, 11, and 12 are the spiritual growth steps. So those are done on a regular basis. So I don't understand about going back and doing all 12 again. I don't see the purpose in regurgitating unless something in the past comes up that hadn't been addressed. What's your feeling on that?
For me, you know, I may not do them every day. I have to remind myself every day. I am an alcoholic, and I am powerless over alcohol. You know, that one I do have to do perfect every day. But I have to practice each one of those principles. I firmly believe that the program works because all 12 of those little pieces work together. And I have to do them all. I was a blackout drunk. there's a lot of things that now I, you know, or understandings I will come to now about my part in something that I never thought I had a part in before, you know, in the past. Then I have to go back to that fourth step, for me anyway, personally, and look at that and go, okay, was this incorporated? Is this something I need to work on? Do I owe an amends here for anything? It wasn't something I did that day. It wasn't something I might have done even in the – or done at all. But the way that I had comprehended, the more awakened I get, the more sobriety I get, the more my understanding changes of myself, my behaviors, how I – you know, where what my place was in a lot of things, my accountability, you know, comes back out. Things I might not have been willing or didn't even realize that I wasn't before. You know, I have to do all of them, and I have to practice all of them in my life. And if I do them, and I practice them daily in the things I do, in the rooms, out of the rooms, you know, at work, in Walmart, I have to do those for myself every day. Otherwise, something's going to give. And not today or not tomorrow, but if I don't do that stuff, that's part of my maintenance. You know, sometimes I have to go back and read all 12 of them and go, wow, why am I here? You know, no human power. You're right, Shannon. This is something no human power could have relieved you of, you know, because I can take that as an alcoholic and go back and beat myself up. Why didn't you get this sooner? Why, you could have just stopped on your own. I mean, I am a human being, so I do tend to go back to those old ways of thinking. And that's what it really came to for me. It became that it wasn't about the substance. It was the thinking that was involved in getting to that substance. Once I could recognize those thoughts and you know, through practicing these things and through being honest with myself and other people and telling my story in an honest way, because until I was honest, my story didn't help anybody. It didn't even help me. I was still living in that mess. You know, I wanted everybody to think I was somebody, and I'm not. You know, we're all addicted to control, and I think that's, for me, that was one of the underlying things. I can control everything. I can control my drinking. There are just some things I can't control. Life is not about my control. And through the, you know, the 12 steps, and I think it's funny, it's like the fundamental and paradoxical part of it is you, the more you learn that, oh, I just lost my train of thought.
The more you learn, the more you, well, I know part of the, go ahead.
Powerlessness, you know, it takes radical powerlessness is actually radical freedom, you know, until you can learn when we say, you know, let it go. Well, people would say, I can't let it go because I have to control it. No, you don't. And if I let go, it's just like anything else. The looser I let go, I take the pressure off. You know, and then I'm able to be free, and it liberates me from the need to control my life and just kind of go with it. But while I was drinking, you know, that was about control. I didn't feel I had control in my life. I had to fill all that void with something. And all the stuff that I filled, whether it be people, work, food, alcohol, drugs, anything I choose to fill that with, you know, anything I've learned, anything I put above my God and my sobriety, I'm going to lose. That's, you know, that's for me. And I've proven that time and time again. But I'm the one
Carl
that has
Jung,
to stay on it.
You know, Carl Jung wrote a letter to Bill W. It was called Spiritus Contra Spiritum. It's spirits against the ravages, spirit against the ravages of spirits. His craving for alcohol was the equivalent on a low level of the spiritual thirst of our being for wholeness, expressed in medieval language, the union with God.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to fill that hole. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting that you were saying about the 12, you know, and what struck me was that on the 12th step, we're saying keeping these principles in all our affairs, right? We carry the message, and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Well, each step has a principle. So I could see now, you know, I really didn't get it, but I think I, by doing it all 12, you're reaffirming the principle. Not so right. much the mechanic of it, but I could see, like, okay, the first, it's honesty, to being mm-hmm. honest. Hope is the second. The third one is faith. Fourth is courage, you know, to be the courage to do this. I mean, that's where a lot of folks stumble is on four. Some never do mm-hmm. four. They never do it.
Mm-hmm.
They start, turns into War and Peace. Me, it took me years. I barely was able to do it, just barely, and it took me years to do a fourth step. Five is integrity. Willingness is six. Humility is seven. Brotherly love is eight. Justice is nine. Justice, oh, hate that justice. Can mercy rob justice? Perseverance is 10. Spirituality is 11. And service is 12. I believe service is a spiritual concept. And what I've discovered is most, if not all, spiritual concepts have a plurality to them, polarity to them, or duality to them. And the polarity to service is graciousness, allowing someone to serve you. And this way, both persons are edified. If you don't allow someone to serve you, then neither one of you get that blessing from the act. So I could see you doing the tour. I could see that. You like that, Harold?
Yep.
So you sponsor now?
Things, you know, the honesty, the hope, the faith, the courage, the integrity, the willingness, all of those things are spiritual fruits, you know?
Yes.
And the graciousness and the service, you know, that's our greatest commandment right now is to love, you know, and to help others, to love God as ourselves and to help others, you know?
Yeah, I'll give you this. Let me give you this. When we're in the service of our fellow beings, are we not in the service of our God? And when we're in that service and in that moment, are we not divorced from self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity? And in that service and in that moment, is that not when we make our conscious contact with our Creator, who lives from moment to moment, eternity to eternity, life everlasting? The magic words in AA is action and more action, for faith without works is dead.
Mm-hmm.
It's service. Yep,
absolutely.
It's all boiled down to service.
And right, and I think someplace I read, he said that, you know, the first thing we had to do was stop playing God. You know, we had to quit playing God. And you know, for me, like you said, when I'm feeling really bad or really down or something, and it's because I'm thinking of myself. And all I have to do is stop that for 10 seconds and help someone else. And all of a sudden,
your mind,
I'm not thinking of me anymore, you know?
Turn your mind mm-hmm. to someone you can help. I tell my sponsors all the time, turn your mind to someone you can help. It's a vacation. You're in a dangerous
mm-hmm.
neighborhood. Get out of it.
Yeah.
Go help somebody.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, I find if I'm feeling really crappy or I think my life is really bad that day or something's really, within three people I can speak to and my life all of a sudden isn't so bad. Somebody else within three people never fails, has it worse than I do, and makes me grateful. You know, I have to be humbled on a daily basis, on a moment-to-moment basis. It's not all about me. And as an alcoholic, my ego likes to take over and say, it is about you. No, it's not.
Yeah, I'm all I think about. I like to think humility is like underwear. I like to think humility is like underwear. It's essential unless it shows, and then it's indecent.
Exactly.
So you're sponsoring now? You said you were sponsoring your sponsor?
Uh-huh. Yeah, actually, I sponsored her. She went through a tough time, and nobody else could see what was going on except for me, and I guess I was grateful for that. But, you know, and so I went through all that helping her and whatnot without a sponsor of my own. And then just, you know, in my network. And recently I found a lady, and she's my, you know, my new confidant. And we kind of sponsor each other to a point. But at the same time, we both have a lot of other girls that we help as well. There's a couple of them that we joke about because, you know, they're like really tough ones. You know, these young girls that come in, and they're just, we tag team them. We're like, I don't have enough time and you don't have enough time, but we can tag team them and they'll be okay. And, you know, sometimes that's what you have to do when you're in a town that you don't have a lot of women.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or choices, yeah. And we all have lives, you know. I'm a student and a business owner and the president of the Merchants Association in my small town.
I'm
very involved in AA. Like I said, I have kids. I'm very, very busy, and we all are. But I have managed to make, you know, where I grew up and the town I grew up in Florida is, I've been here for 35 years, and we have the produce market is right there on the corner. So even my customers are like my friends and family. Everybody knows to come in there, you know, and I'm not real quiet about being in recovery. You know, I'm proud to be there. I won't tell them you're there, but I'll tell them I'm there. And, it's amazing that, you know, people come in there and want to touch base with me. It's like I have my own little recovery spot there. Hey, do you have a where and when, or do you have a this, or, hey, I know, you know, I'll say something off the wall and somebody will be like, hey, I just moved to the area. Do you know where something is? Or, hey, my son's going through something. And it's just, it's crazy. There's not a day that goes by.
Oh, that's great.
That my,
you know,
story,
Dr.
doesn't help another human being. Which
Dr.
in turn
Bob
helps me.
Dr. Bob said there was two ways we could break anonymity, in press, radio, and films, and that we were so anonymous that the other drunks couldn't find us. So it puts a little different spin on it. But, you know, the history of AA is fascinating. It's really amazing what I didn't know before I started Rum Radio. I really, it was amazing the stuff that was out there, and go like, wow, you know, then I realized, and then I tell people, no, that's not what it's talking about. And
right.
He was right on. Yeah. If somebody comes into your store, if you want to promote your store, what's the name of your store?
Aunt Martha's Produce and Specialty Market. It's in Floral City, Florida, at the intersection of Highway 41 and 48. We're open 7 days.
Oh, okay. 7 days, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 7 days. And my mother is a wonderful woman who's an icon here in our little town as well. She started our some of our civic organizations and things we have here. And so I get to work with her. It's a beautiful gift to be able to work with my mother. You know, when I was drinking, she was the only person, other than my children, of course, but they didn't know better at the time, that never gave up on me, you know, even when I did. And I was sure that God had. My mother did not. So it's a gift. That's another gift to sobriety, is to be able to work with my mother and, you know, be around her and around the people that I care about, you know.
Well, it sounds like you have more than a full life. You have a full life and then some.
I do. But today I'm very grateful that I have the ability to back up. You know, I can make it, I can let it get as, you know, I found that for me, I would go and help others when I first came in the program and I first started really getting it, and I'd get so excited that I would give away almost everything I had. And people used to say, well, you have to give it away to keep it. But for me, that wasn't true. The more I would try to give to other people, the less I was giving to myself, you know, and I didn't want to be selfish. You know what I mean? I was so humble that I didn't want to be selfish, and I was always last, and I always put myself at the back. And I finally, you know, I had to step up and realize that you are important, and you need to take care of you before you take care of anybody else. So, you know, there's times when I have to literally say, okay, Shannon, how much can you do for other people when you're not getting anything, you know, you're not filling up your own tin. You can empty it once it's full. And, there are times, you know, when I'd go out and I'd get so busy helping other people and this one and that one, I literally would pass myself in the driveway. And I'm like, wow, I didn't know who I was. So I'm very grateful today for the ability to help when I can and to be able to say no. That was huge for me.
Oh,
I have the ability to say no. So
you know, I'm an Alkanon.
Or, hmm?
Did you know that I'm an Alkanon?
Are you?
An Alkanon? That's Al-Anon.
You know,
I made
funny.
That word up. That's Al-Anon and AA. Huh?
I think sometimes the two meetings, you know, I was always on both sides. I was an alcoholic, but I was also married to an alcoholic. And I think sometimes going to the two different kinds of meetings gave me a whole new insight for myself, you know, on my addiction too.
You know how you know when you're codependent?
Huh?
When you're dying, someone else's life flashes in front of your eyes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I recommend Al-Anon funny. To my sponsees. I said, you know, you're going to be dealing with a lot of drunks. If you really want to be a good AA sponsor, go to Al-Anon. I consider Al-Anon postgraduate AA. But this is once, you know, once the booze and the drugs have come to the point where they're not going to have an allure anymore. So now the question is your interpersonal relationships and how you deal with the world, and that's Al-Anon. Al-Anon will get you that extra. Your postgraduate degree at recovery is found in the rooms of Al-Anon. Harold, you got anything last words?
Well, I really like the idea. I've also gone to Al-Anon and AA the whole time, and I recommend both. And my first sponsor said a number of things that helped me a lot. One was that drinking and drugging was a search for God at the wrong address. And so it's been a long search, but as we say on the Rum Radio website, that working with others is effective when nothing else has been. So I appreciate the privilege of being here, and I thank God for another day of recovery. Thanks.
Thanks, Harold. Any last words, Shannon?
I'd just like to say thank you, too. I appreciate, you know, you having me on and spreading the message and what you do for me as well as for other alcoholics. And, you know, Facebook is one of those things that I have to say just has – I know people now from all over the world that are in recovery from, you know, different states, different countries, people that I've actually gone and met in person. It's just – the recovery program, along with the new social media and the things that you're doing and being on, you know, on the air like this, I think is just phenomenal. I think, you know, in the 60s, 50s and 60s, it was you wanted to be hidden if you were an alcoholic. You didn't want anybody to know, hence part of the anonymous part. But I joke with everybody now and I say it's hip to be square today. You know, it's getting your life, you know. I've never met anybody that said, oh, poor you, you're an AA, or you're in the cover. It's always, I've never met with any opposition. It's been positive. So I think it's really says a lot for our country, because like you said at the beginning of the show, our country, we do tend to emulate what's happening, and then our country is what we are, and it's kind of a mess. And I'm really hoping to see that maybe the country will take a lesson from us for change, and maybe we can all get back together and on the right path for a new one.
Great. Yeah, well, thank you. And, it is Facebook recovery is really quite blossomed. I mean, there's some groups that have 30,000 and 20,000, and they're all over the world, and India and South America. And then they have the you click the button and you get the translator and, you know, and Bing, and you can talk to people in other languages. And it's really, we started this, like, the website about 4.5 years ago, and that's just when, and I didn't know at the time, that the browsers were coming up with interpreters. There was a way to interpret. So if you were in Hungary and you got to Rum Radio, it would show it to you in Hungarian. And then go like, wow. Yeah. I mean, just think of that, you know. So basically it's just like anywhere in the world, you click a button and it's in your language. It's about 60 or 70% accurate, but it seems like it's getting better. All the algorithms are getting better and better all the time. So they're getting the cultural inferences in with the language, and it's getting cleaner and cleaner. So it's like we're in the like an opposite Tower of Babel, you know, like you have the ability to communicate all over the world. That's really powerful stuff. So, and when I started, I didn't know any of that was going on. I discerned it later down the road. So this has an impact. You know, it's a positive impact. We believe in basic AA stuff, you know, basic NA stuff, you know, working one in another. We have one post on there, and it's you've seen the man on the bed. You ever see that? The man on the bed. Yeah, it's an AA icon, and it's a iconic picture. It was painted in 1955, but it was a depiction of what happened in 1935. It was Bill W. and Dr. Bob going to Akron Hospital and carrying the message to AA number 3, Bill D. Bill D. was a lawyer, and this was 4 years before the publication of the Big Book. Now, if you see the picture, the guy's got a book in his hand, so more than likely it was the Bible. Because it was the only book that they allowed you to take into the hospital. So there was no Big Book at the time. So basically what was going on is you had Dr. Bob, you had Bill W., who was the chief architect of AA, and you had Bill D., who was a lawyer. So this thing of ours started with a doctor, a lawyer, and an Indian chief. And you like that? And it was before the Big Book, so it's the power of one drunk talking to another still to this day is our most powerful tool of persuasion.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. You know, it's funny, when I was a kid, we lived in Ohio when I was young, very young, and my aunt, we'd go visit her in Akron, and for day trips, she would take us to the Mayflower Hotel. And, you know, fast forward all these years, and you know, I'd seen that. You know, I remember being in the lobby and seeing the restaurant and the little thing that they had there for the phone booth or whatever.
Oh, how cool.
And so, you know, didn't think another thing about it. Fast forward all these years later, and about 6 years ago, I went to a gratitude dinner in a neighboring county. And don't you know, the picture was sitting on the table, and it just flashed back. And I was like, oh, my goodness. I was like, I was there.
I've been there.
You never know where you've been and where you're going to end up. I've been there in lots of ways now. So,
if you're interested, on the website, it's on step 12. There's a step 12. Gives you there's a post connected with the 12th step. It's called Billy Pilgrim at the Mayflower.
Okay. All right.
It has some insights that I derived from several AA historians. The little nuances that people didn't get. I get stuff like that all the time. So take a look. It's really good stuff. I believe in the AA practice. I believe that the Big Book, does the Big Book come from the Bible? And the fellow said, I don't know. He said, but I know they both came from the same place.
Yeah.
Thanks again, absolutely. Shannon. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much. An absolute pleasure. I'm very grateful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Harold. And in closing, I'd like to say, Rum Radio, we're in 151 foreign countries, including Mississippi, 2,800 towns, cities, and villages, and between 300,000 and 400,000 hits to the website. So people are getting good information on sponsorship. I believe it's helping a lot of people. And, hey, if you're looking for good sponsorship information, remember, we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.